To mark the launch of the new Spectator app, we're offering our podcast listeners the chance to try a 3-month digital subscription absolutely free. To start your trial, go to spectator.co.uk/app offer. Hurry though, the offer ends on Sunday.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. Andrew Marr's first guest today was Douglas Ross, the leader of the Scottish Conservatives. The row about the Prime Minister's arrangements to pay for the refurbishment of his Downing Street flat continues to rumble on. Marr asked Ross if he would demand the same standards of Boris Johnson as he did of the Scottish First Minister.
Can I ask you something about what you've said about Nicola Sturgeon? You said that she had broken the ministerial code and should therefore resign. I take it from that that you believe that if it turns out that Boris Johnson has broken the ministerial code, he should resign.
Well, Nicola Sturgeon was found to have misled MSPs in Parliament by a cross-party committee of MSPs. But I think, as your earlier commentator said, there are currently 3 investigations underway in terms of what the Prime Minister has done and issues around that. And I think it's right that we look to have serious questions answered on all of those points.
I'm just making the point, if he is found to have broken the ministerial code, and I'm using my words carefully, if he is found to have broken that code, should he resign, yes or no?
Of course, I think people expect the highest standards of those in the highest office of the land, and that's why I think people are looking at the investigations that are currently ongoing and waiting for the answers to be heard.
Marr put the same point to the Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab.
Douglas Ross, leader of the Scottish Conservatives, just told me that if the Electoral Commission found that he had broken the law, he should resign. Do you agree with that?
The one thing I'm not going to do is speculate on what the outcome of the various different reviews are. The Prime Minister's been clear he covered the costs. He's been clear he's followed the codes of conduct. He's had official advice.
But obviously, if he's broken the law, he should resign.
Why? Andrew, you're giving hypothetical speculation on 3 reviews. The reason that we've got those reviews is... The Prime Minister takes this very seriously. I think the right thing for me to do is respect the integrity of those reviews and let them run their course rather than commenting about what may or may not be found at the end of them.
Well, Douglas Ross can answer it.
He'd take decisions...
Let me ask you an even simpler question. Do you have complete faith in the Electoral Commission?
I think it's complete faith. Look, I trust it to look at these things the right way.
Sophie Ridge challenged Raab over the review by Lord Gait into the Prime Minister's financial arrangements.
So who has the power to decide whether the conclusions of that investigation are published and acted on?
Well, I think the Prime Minister's been clear that we will have full transparency in relation to the processes.
It's not quite the question I asked, though, is it?
Well, so, look, that process is something that's been in place for successive governments. He's going to engage fully with it, and there'll be transparency around
the
conclusions
of it. What's the answer, then? If you're being clear and transparent, what's the answer to the question?
Sorry, I thought I'd answered it. What's the specific question you think I've overlooked, Sophie?
Who has the power to decide whether the conclusions of the investigation being carried out by Christopher Gait are published and acted on?
Well, in terms of the publication, the Prime Minister has already been clear that that there's going to be full transparency. If you're asking who has the ultimate accountability over the Prime Minister, it's the electorate and the voters. That's the way it works in our democracy.
Thanks so much for explaining how the electoral system works in the UK. I really appreciate that. I'm just asking who has the power to decide whether the conclusions of that investigation are acted on. The answer is the Prime Minister, isn't it?
Well, the Prime Minister is the ultimate arbiter of or the ultimate accountability for the ministerial code. He has the authority to dismiss ministers to make sure they live up to the code. And so if your question is then, but who holds him to account ultimately, and that's why I come back to the point I made earlier, there's no separate body or individual that will have power over him, is the British people. He's accountable to them. That's why we have elections.
But when it comes to this investigation, the Prime Minister is effectively judge, jury and executioner for his own trial?
No, because he's... As I said, he's going to be fully transparent about it. He'll be accountable to Parliament, which is, of course, the main way the government of the day is held to account. And then ultimately the ballot box. That's the way it works.
While discussing COVID, Raab suggested that the 21st of June was not the final deadline for the removal of all restrictions.
Are we planning to vaccinate school children?
It's not something we've made a decision on. What we are doing is we come through step 3 and step 4. and with the positive progress we've made, looking at what extra safeguards, caveats need to be put in place, and also looking at, once we've done cohorts 1 to 9, which are the adult population, the most vulnerable, what we might do then. Because we want to get to a position at the end of June where we can get life back as close to normal as possible, but there'll still need to be some safeguards in place. That's one of the tools that we'll look at, or one of the options that we'll look at, but no decision has been made.
What kind of safeguards will stay in place?
I don't want to prejudge it. It will we'll look at the things in the round. It will be, particularly, I think it'll be around distancing. Maybe there'll be something around masks. But I don't really want to prejudge. Those are just some of the options.
Ma also brought up the case of Nazanin Zaghari Radcliffe, the British-Iranian dual national who has been further imprisoned by the Iranian authorities. Nazanin's husband, Richard, has described the decision as a negotiating tactic.
Does the British government believe that she is being held as a hostage?
I think it's very difficult to argue against that characterisation.
I mean, the reason I'm asking, as you know, I'm sure, is that her husband, Richard, and the Foreign Affairs Select Committee say that what's going on in Iran is a widespread practice of taking people effectively hostage for diplomatic and commercial reasons, and that we have to call this out as a government and describe it for what it is.
Well, I think that's right at one level. I would just say my job, and we've got a wider context which is linked, which is the JCPOA negotiations. We're working with the US and the other powers to get Iran back to full compliance. And if you like, the leverage that the Iranians try and use through detainees, including Nazanin and our other Iranian-British national, British dual nationals, is clearly that takes place. I'm also going to be very careful in those very sensitive, delicate negotiations that I don't do anything which is counterproductive to the goal of securing her release as soon as possible. And indeed, I should say, the release of the other dual nationals that we have in Evin prison.
So in terms of Britain, this all goes back to a debt for tanks under the Shah, £400 million. International courts have agreed that we actually owe that money. That's what all this is about. Why can't we just pay the money?
It's not solely about that. And of course, the...
But it would help a lot if we paid it.
Well, look, we've said, and look, be very clear, that debt is something that we want to have resolved, and we are committed to resolution. That is not actually the thing that is holding this up at the moment. It is the wider context as we come up to the Iranian presidential elections and the wider negotiations on the JCPOA, which inevitably from the Iranian perspective, the two are considered in tandem. But let's also be clear about something else. Nazanin is held unlawfully, in my view, as a matter of international law. I think she's been treated in the most abusive, torturous way. I think it amounts to torture the way she's been treated. And there is a very clear, unequivocal obligation on the Iranians to release her and all of those who are being held as leverage immediately and without condition. And we call on Iran to step up and comply with its obligations.
Ridge interviewed the Shadow Foreign Secretary, Lisa Nandy, and asked her for Labour's stance on the Prime Minister's financial affairs.
There is an arrogance at the heart of this that he seems to believe that we don't deserve to know the truth about what goes on in government. This really matters because at the moment we don't know who the Prime Minister is beholden to. We don't know if he's promised them anything in return. We don't know what the implications of that are. And over the last few weeks, we've seen this raft of revelations about the financial networks at the heart of government, cabinet ministers who profited from the pandemic, favours that have been done for donors from the Tory party. We've seen foreign dictators who are able to pick up the phone to the Prime Minister and give instructions. And instead of pushing back on those instructions, he puts one of his top advisers onto the case. If the Prime Minister is beholden to other people, who is he not serving? And that's the people of this country. And that's why this really matters. This is about integrity, it's about trust, and it's about whether there's one rule for them and one rule for everybody else. And I feel that particularly strongly at the moment with the year that we've had. I think other people in this country feel particularly strongly about it as well. It is just simply not good enough.
And finally, Nandy gave Ridge some decidedly pessimistic expectation management ahead of this week's local and regional elections.
We're going out, we're fighting for every vote, we're not taking a single one for granted. To be honest with you, Sophie, I have felt in the last few weeks that something is shifting a little. It doesn't feel like 2019, which was the worst election I can ever remember fighting in my lifetime. I think people have understood that Labour is under new management and they're looking at us again. I think they are really concerned about the way that this Prime Minister carries on and the way in which it seems to be one rule for them and one rule for everybody else. So I think people are starting to think again about Labour. Whether that translates into to good results at these local elections, I'm not sure. To be honest, we've got a big mountain to climb, and it's going to take time to rebuild that trust. But we're going out, we're fighting for every single vote. And whether or not we get a good set of results in these local elections, I think that they're likely to still be very difficult for us.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening,
and do join us again next week.